welcome to episode 17 of VR Side Chats. So, my guest this week is a talented filmmaker by the name of Jeremy Casper, whose short film Lightning, a VR story, is available to watch now on Veer and YouTube. I first met Jeremy, it must have been about a few months back now, I think, when I interviewed him for one of Veer's live Altspace events. In this episode, we talk about how he animated Lightning from scratch, as well as how he also created a standard 2D version of the film as well, which recently played at the Academy recognised Holly Shorts Film Festival, which is really cool. So yeah, without further ado, here's my chat with Jeremy Casper.
Okay, yeah. So Jeremy, thank you for joining me on the podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me, Daniel. I really appreciate it.
So we first met virtually a few months back when you came and did one of the Veer Altspace events.
Yeah.
But presumably some of the people that are listening were either not there or don't know who you are. So maybe let's start with, just tell us a bit about yourself and how you got into the crazy world of VR.
Yeah, I'll be happy to share that with you. Well, my background is in traditional filmmaking. So I've been a movie lover and a movie maker and a student of film really my entire life. I don't really remember a time in my life when I didn't want to be telling stories visually in some way. And I moved out to Los Angeles, where I live now, and I've worked on and off in the film industry in different capacities. But about it's going over a decade now ago, I started working at a film school here in Los Angeles, and it's actually my alma mater. And I love it. I love teaching. I love filmmaking. It's been a really great marriage of passions for me. And it was through working at the school that I first was introduced to virtual reality through a colleague of mine, John Booker, who actually wrote the first book ever on narrative storytelling in virtual reality. And so we would just sit around for hours and hours and talk about VR. And it was this technology that theoretically I knew I would love. I knew if I just put a headset on, I would love it, but I just never got around to it. And then it was April of last year of 2018. I was actually right after seeing Ready Player One. I was like, okay, I've got to give this technology a try. We had a system there at the school. So I went in, put a headset on, and my first VR experience was the Oculus Studios little short film called Lost, which is, kind of a take or an homage to of the Iron Giant. Mm-hmm. And it's only about, maybe 3 or 4 minutes long. And I was just mesmerized. I had this, the feelings and emotions I experienced watching that short little film reminded me of the feelings and emotions that I had going to the theater when I was a kid. And I just right then and there was like, this is what I have to do. And so I threw myself into the deep end and started creating content in virtual reality. So that's kind of how it all began.
Cool. So just very quickly going back, when you were young, and what was the film that or films that first really got you into that mindset that you wanted to, that filmmaking was something that you wanted to get into?
Yeah, I think I think that any filmmaker of my generation has to cite Star Wars, in some way, shape, or form. So that was very influential. But really, it was the animated films of Walt Disney. Animation and special effects were what actually really initially drew me to the world of cinema. I was mesmerized by, I called them paper people when I was little, and I would see cartoons on TV and I didn't have a word for it yet, but it's like, they're not real people, but they move. So I just called them paper people. And I was so interested in how paper people worked. Like, how do you make that happen? And my dad, he took a little flip book and he just drew some lines down in a corner of the flip book. And he demonstrated to me how the process of animation worked. And I saw this little pencil line that he drew just bouncing all over the edge of the page. And so I was immediately wanted to learn more. And so, I think, some of the specific films, trying to think of the ones that really influenced me, in terms of the Disney films, I just really all the classic Disney films, Pinocchio and, Sleeping Beauty, The Rescuers is one of my favorite Disney films. Milt Kahl is one of my—he's my top favorite Disney animator, and I think that his animation of Medusa in that film is just one of the greatest character animations of all time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the Disney films, and then Star Wars, and then of course Steven Spielberg, his movies, and then I'm also a classic cinema fan, so Alfred Hitchcock, Rear Window, all the Jimmy Stewart, Alfred Hitchcock films were very influential to me as well.
Cool. So that's interesting that you bring up the Disney films, actually, because your film Lightning, it when I first watched it, it very much reminded me of A Bug's Life. It kind of felt like it kind of felt like I just kind of stepped onto the set of that movie. Not that it had a set, but that's kind of how it felt. But yeah, with Lightning, how did the idea come about for that? Is that something that had been festering for a while, and then you know you come across VR and that you decided that would be the best medium to tell that story, or was that something that you come up with specifically for VR?
Yeah, it was the idea for Lightning was very specific for VR. After I had that initial experience with the short film Lost, I immediately started thinking of ideas. And the ideas I was initially coming up with were the ideas that I think a lot of content creators first come up with in VR. And they were more just experiences. Oh, this would just be a cool thing to look at. Oh, I should do this alien abduction movie because it would just be fun. And, you know, I wasn't really thinking in terms of story at that point, even though story is my passion. That's what I care the most about. Yeah. I think just like with any new technology, I was so enamored with what I was seeing that at the moment I was cool with just creating an interesting experience. And then I had coffee with a friend of mine, and he, a guy here in LA who's recently started a virtual reality company, and he's yet to get into the world of narrative, but he really encouraged me. He's like, Jeremy, you know, focus on story. He was like, but keep it really simple. Like just come up with the simplest story that you possibly can. Mm-hmm. And he gave me a few other short films to go watch, some short VR experiences. And really, Daniel, it was just in a matter of maybe a day, I came up with a story idea. I've always been enamored with lightning bugs. I think they're just so cinematic. And so that was pretty easy. I knew I wanted my character to be a lightning bug. I thought, well, that will be something relatively easy to do, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so I just started thinking about, you know, the cinematics of a lightning bug and what the cinematics and the visuals could potentially represent. I love the idea that this bug has something unique about it. Its butt lights up. So I thought, well, what could a light symbolize? And I, you know, thought about courage. So when the light's off, he doesn't have his courage. When the light's on, he does. And so, you know, it just from there, the story came pretty quickly. It's like, well, let's scare the light out of him. And then he's got to find the courage to turn it back on. So the initial idea, it was just a matter of a few hours that I came up with the story idea. But then as I began creating and writing it, and even to start animating it, the story evolved and changed, and it kind of found its voice. So that was sort of the story process of finding lightning.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously I know how you animated it, but people listening stuff, like what software did you use to animate the whole film?
Yeah, the film was animated entirely in a VR application called Tvori, T-V-O-R-I. And it's become my favorite VR app. So the characters were all sculpted and modeled in Oculus Medium, and then exported piece by piece into Tvori and rigged in sort of a non-traditional way in Tvori, and then animated with keyframes, just like you would do, you know, traditional 3D animation. But it's all done in virtual reality. So that's the unique thing about Lightning is it's not just a 360 3D animated film. It's a 360 3D animated film that was entirely created in virtual reality. So I had a headset on the entire time I was making it, which was so intuitive and so much fun. It was really, really amazing how a guy like me who had a lot of animation experience, but no 3D experience, how quickly I was able to make that transition. The learning curve, there was a learning curve, but it wasn't anything like, you know, learning Maya from scratch.
Oh yeah.
So yeah.
So how did you even come about Tavori? Was that, you know, did you just find them online, or?
It was pure accident. What was really kind of fun about the whole experience last year is, you know, not to sound too corny, but the whole process last year just felt very magical, because when I came up with the idea for the story of lightning, I didn't know how I was going to make it. Mm. I just had this idea for a story, and I assumed that making it would mean, okay, I've got to go learn Maya and Blender and Unity, and I've got to learn all these tools. So in my mind, lightning wasn't going to be a story that was going to be realized for another 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
So when I started, but then I discovered these sculpting programs like Masterpiece VR, and then ultimately I landed on Medium. And so just for fun, I was able to sculpt, you know, the character of Lightning, and I could actually see the character in 3 dimensions. And it was just so amazing to have that experience. And then still at that point, I wasn't planning on making the movie. But then it was very shortly after that I discovered Tavori just online, just through the Oculus store. I saw the little trailer, the little preview video, and I was like, wow, this looks interesting. I wonder if I can do something with this. Downloaded it, and I brought Lightning, the character, into Tavori just as one big solid object, you know, not rigged or anything, and just moved him around a little bit. You know, just this, almost like I had like an old Star Wars action figure, and I could see that I could animate just this solid object just moving through the environment. And I got really excited, and I was like, well, you know what, maybe I could use Tavori just to make like an animatic, or I could use it just to kind of create a storyboard, you know, for this. I could do a conceptualization of the film that I eventually want to do. And then the more I got to know Tavori and I saw the possibility and potential, it became evident pretty quickly that if I have, you know, a little time and patience, I might actually be able to make a complete film in Tavori. So I think it's kind of funny that the character of Lightning was actually sculpted before I even knew I was going to be able to animate him. So it was a really backwards way of working, but yeah, Tavori, I just stumbled upon it and fell in love with it.
Amazing. So when sculpting the characters, did you do that from scratch, or was you working from templates that were already in Medium?
It was completely from scratch. Okay. So with the character of Lightning, I did several mock-up sketches of him first. And then, because I do have a background in illustration and I've worked as a storyboard artist in the past and so on and so forth.
Well, that's handy then.
So, So I did, you know, a few sketches of him, and easily you can bring your photos into Medium so you can use them as references. So he was sculpted, all the characters, were all, you know, just original sculpts from scratch and Medium. And, you know, I got to the point by the end of the film, you know, I could sculpt, paint, export, and rig a character all in, you know, maybe four or five hours, you know. Yeah. So it just became something that I could do really quickly. Yeah, all from scratch.
that's amazing. And so in terms of like the camera movement and stuff, that was all done in Tavori as well?
Yes. So everything visually you see in the film was done in Tavori. The only exception is a few of the titles, just some of the text you see. I used the text tool in Blender to just make some 3D text that I could then bring into Tavori as objects and use. But outside of the text, everything you see, the lighting, the camera movements, the works, it's all done in Tavori.
That's pretty amazing. And the thing I like about that as well is that, you know, sometimes if you're working on a standard 360 video piece, you know, sometimes it could take a bit of time because, you know, you're waiting for all your collaborators to sort of get your calendars all in order and stuff, so you can find time to get together and stuff. Whereas with that, you can just, you know, get started on your own and, you know, work on it in your own time. You don't have to sort of worry about scheduling with other people.
It's so true. Yeah. And that was one thing. And I don't say this to, you know, pat myself on the back, but Lightning, you know, it was a one-man band. I did the whole thing by myself. And again, that is not to to herald me in any way. That's just to show the power of virtual reality and what anybody can do with a headset. You can really create some fun things.
Absolutely. So you finished a film, then you released it online. I mean, obviously I know where it's played and stuff, but so in terms of releasing it, what was the plan for that? Like, did you research into like where to release it? Was you thinking about, trying to monetize it in any way or something on release, or, you know, how was that?
That's a really good question, because I did put a lot of thought into that. So as a traditional filmmaker, I'm no stranger to the process of selling films, monetizing content, releasing, festivals, premiere statuses, and you know, there's a lot of things you have to take into consideration when you're planning to release a film. And I just know from experience that monetizing media is difficult. I mean, it's really, really hard. And I wrote and directed a feature film, a very low budget feature film, a few years ago. And, you know, of all forms of media, feature film should be in some ways they should be the easiest to monetize, just because they are a product that can be much more easily sold. It's hard to sell a short film. But you know, it was really difficult getting, my feature film out there. And, you know, part of the frustration too, with that feature film is with a lot of film festivals, they have, you know, what's called premiere statuses. And there are some festivals, and usually it's the big ones, the important ones, that, won't take your film if it's screened at any other festival.
Yeah.
And so you got to be really, you know, strategic about, who you submit to and who you say okay to. And, you know, what happened with my feature is I ended up sitting on that thing for years without anybody getting to see it while we're making deals and getting it out there. And it was really, as an artist, it was very, very depressing to have put so much time and energy into something and to just, and for it to take so long to get out. So with Lightning, you know, I was able, the whole film took less than 6 months to make. And, you know, I decided, all right, do I want to go the festival route and, you know, try to, you know, get into these prestigious film festivals and maybe win some awards and all that? Or do I just want people to see it?
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it came down for me is I just want people to see it. I don't care about making money. I don't care about accolades. I don't care about winning awards. I just want people to see it. So I remember, you know, I uploaded, I think YouTube was the first platform that I uploaded it to. Maybe it was Facebook. I don't remember. And I remember I knew as soon as I hit that upload button that, you know, I just killed my premiere status. So that just immediately meant, all right, there's a bunch of film festivals now that won't take me. So do I do this or not? And I went ahead and just did it. And as soon as I did that, then I just kind of went crazy and I just started uploading it on all different platforms. And I'm so glad I did, Daniel, because honestly, getting people's responses online and reading the comments and seeing how many people are viewing it and hearing how people are wanting, even, you know, people using the film, like in their classrooms and stuff like that. Oh, wow. It's been so much more rewarding than, you know, one night at a film festival, you know, where we just kind of all watch it and everybody forgets it. So, you know, as far as monetizing, that's always in the back of my mind. How can I make a living doing this? No one's really cracked that nut yet. But I think because, you know, Tavori, it's just me sitting here making this film. It's something I do because I love, you know, the idea of it needing to make tons of money or needing to be seen by millions of people. That need's not there. Yeah. And I'm able to just create things and put it out there and let people enjoy it. So that was kind of the process of what do I do with this film once I'm done.
And it's had a lot of views on YouTube as well.
Yeah, I think we're at, I think we're at 63,000 now, which, you know, it's not viral, but it's respectable.
that's a good amount. Like, did you advertise it anywhere, or is that a lot of that organic?
Well, I didn't make any efforts. I was just very fortunate that, YouTube, Facebook, Veer, and Samsung all featured Lightning as one of their featured films or staff picks or something at some point in the process. So, you know, I didn't advocate for that or ask for that, but I was just very fortunate that on all four of those platforms that happened, which just really got it in front of people. And so, yeah, I was just very blessed and fortunate that it worked out that way.
Was Vimeo ever on your radar to upload to as well? Just out of curiosity.
Yes, and it actually is on Vimeo. Oh, okay. But you know, it's so funny. I go over to you know, YouTube, and I see 63,000 views, and I go to Veer, and I think Veer has like 10,000 views, and YouTube I think is close to about 10,000, and then I go over to Vimeo, and it's like 140.
It's weird, isn't it? Like they made this whole big thing with the 360 stuff, but I can't find a way to watch any of that, any of the 360 content on Vimeo on a headset.
I know. So Vimeo is one of those, it's just an enigma. Yeah. I don't understand how it works. I haven't figured out, you know, their algorithms or whatever they're doing, but yeah, I don't know what the deal is there.
It's strange as well, because like their staff picks are almost like an award in themselves nowadays. It's like, if you've got that staff pick badge, you know, you're pretty high caliber. It's crazy. But going back to what you said about the film festivals, I've found in the past as well that, you know, some of them won't even accept your work unless you're attending as well. That's like another thing of theirs. I was only fortunate to get a short film I did a couple of years back into a festival in Nigeria last year. Even though I didn't attend. I was toying with it, because I thought, I've never been to Nigeria, but a friend of mine said like that particular part of Nigeria is very dangerous for like tourists and stuff. I was like, yeah, okay, I'm too scared to go now.
I'll just hear about it online.
but Lightning did play at a film festival very recently, the Holly Shorts Film Festival, which is like I was reading, it was like an Academy recognized festival, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's an Oscar. It's an Oscar qualifying festival, and it was such an honor to get to play there. So in case listeners are curious, Lightning exists in two different formats. There's a 360 format that you can see in headset, and then there's also a theatrical version, just a standard 16:9 version. So the 16:9 version is the version that screened at Holly Shorts. And it was really fun to get to see it with an audience. Because usually when I'm showing it to people, it's me and one person with a headset on. So to get to watch it, you know, with a theater, you know, full of attendees who we were part of an animation block. So, you know, the people there are already excited about animated films, and it was a really rewarding experience to get to screen, the TCL Chinese Theater on Hollywood Boulevard. So amazing. it was just a fun little cap to it all. Yeah.
I didn't realize you had it as a regular 16:9 short as well. That's really cool. Yeah. So like people could literally just watch it on screen and then be like, oh, okay. If you want to be immersed in that world, you can watch it with a headset on as well.
Yeah. And, you know, it was really interesting, Daniel, when I was making Lightning, I knew that both versions were going to exist. And I really, because the theatrical version is on YouTube as well. And so I just thought, well, the 16:9 version, the regular theatrical cut, that's going to be the one that everybody watches. And I was just shocked that it was the 360 version that took off that everybody watched. So I think on YouTube right now, the theatrical version has about 700 views. So, you know, in comparison, it's just nothing. But it was also fun to have the theatrical version, just ease of showing people, you know, the process too. So
that's really cool. So has, you know, having all these eyes on the film, has that, you know, opened anything up for you? Like in terms of other VR work or projects and things like that other people want to get you on board?
Yeah, I think that it's definitely sparked lots of relationships. So I've actually got two meetings tomorrow with some VR people, two different companies that I'll be meeting with for various things, you know, not some collaboration, some things, you know, not just kind of getting to know each other. But all that's come about because of Lightning and also working with Tavori. The developers of Tavori, they're based out of St. Petersburg, Russia, and they're just some of the greatest people I've ever met. They are just kind and sweet and so attentive to their users. And so it's been really fun to be able to kind of help them out in some ways. So to sort of be a spokesperson for them. So yeah, there have definitely been some doors that have opened. But you know, really at the end of the day, I'm just, my thoughts and attentions are just working on, you know, future projects. So we'll see where it all goes.
Sure. Well, that actually nicely brings me to my next question. What is next on the slate?
Yeah, well, I am neck deep in my next project right now. I haven't really talked about it, you know, yet publicly, but it's going to be another 360 animated film done in Tavori, very similar to the process that I went through with Lightning. Cool. This one's a sci-fi film, and it's the story of a little boy who gets kidnapped by some evil robots. And has to befriend a lonely alien in order to find his way back home. How do I get back home kind of story, like in the vein of like a Wizard of Oz or even like an E.T., you know, how do we get back home? So it's going to have themes of, you know, sacrifice and friendship in it. And so right now I'm really heavy into I guess we'd call it the pre-production phase. So still building environments and characters and all that. So really excited for what I'm seeing. But I was telling a friend of mine the other day that I think that I may have bit off a little bit more than I was ready to chew with this one. So it's pretty
well. Involved. It'll be worth it. You've already got yourself a view on YouTube and beer. So
well, there we go.
It's totally worth it.
All right. So no, yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, it's fun and it's exciting. I do have to say though too, you know, with Lightning, one of the things that I think makes it work so well is the work of my composer. He's actually a former student of mine. His name is Andy Luton.
Okay.
Yeah, and I knew when he was a student, I could see his talent, and so I turned to him immediately, asked if he would do the music, and he agreed. And so, you know, if we can work out all the details, we're going to partner again for the second film too. Amazing. So I was really fortunate to be able to work with someone as talented as Andy.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's really cool. So, you know, do you have any other projects that you have in the, like, thinking about doing after this? Is like, are you just going to stick with animated 360, or you got any plans to, you know, shoot a live action 360?
Yeah. Oh, Daniel, my creative wheels are always spinning. They're always turning. I think for the moment, the plan is to continue to stay within the realm of animation. Mm-hmm. However, eventually I do want to move into, you know, 6 degrees of freedom experiences with, you know, some interactivity. Yeah. And so I think that, you know, I love this, creating these 360 videos, but still my favorite VR experiences are the ones that are the full 6 degrees of freedom with interactivity. And I still want to be the storyteller. So, you know, maybe I don't necessarily want to go in the whole vein of just choose your own adventure, but, you know, I look at some of the things that like Baobab Studios are doing and, you know, a few other ones where they're directing the narrative, but there's still an acknowledgement of the audience presence in the story. I think that's kind of the next step up for me. And I definitely have I have one specific story idea that's kind of the dream project that I would like to realize in that medium. And then after that, I'm really looking, you know, forward to seeing what's going to happen in the future with, I can't even remember the name of the technology, but you know, it would be comparable to like is it called photogrammetry, where they, you know, you can photograph the world and import the models, you know, into a 360 space. And, you know, there's a lot of experimentation going on now with, you know, even shooting video in that way. Mm-hmm. And it's beyond my comprehension, but I think that, you know, just in the 1 year that I've been doing this, how many advances have taken place and how much the whole world has grown and developed. I just can't imagine where things are going to be in 5 years.
Yeah.
Exactly. So some of the stories. Like, yeah, go ahead.
Like, No, sorry, go on, you go first.
I was just going to say some of the stories that, you know, I'm coming up with, they're inspired by the technologies that are changing. It's like, oh, I can do that now. Well, that spurs on a story idea. So yeah, it's not a, they're definitely intertwined for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like, it's crazy when you think that the recent Lion King remake was sort of done like entirely virtually.
So unbelievable. Yeah.
Absolutely, you know, crazy. Yeah. But exciting. That sounds
like. Yeah. And I think that, you know, VR, you know, there's always a lot of talk about the future of VR as a consumer product and, you know, where is it really going? And, you know, are we really all going to have headsets someday, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I do believe that VR as a production tool, I think it's here to stay. And I think, you know, directors like Jon Favreau and I mean, even, you know, Peter Jackson and Steven Spielberg have incorporated, you know, virtual reality in their production pipelines. And I think the more artists who do that, I think the more it's just going to become a common tool.
Yeah.
So I think as a creative tool, as a part of the production pipeline, I think VR is here to stay.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think like a lot of, I mean, a lot of people I speak to, you know, some people kind of got into the industry to make money and stuff, like to do commercial work and stuff. And then, you know, a year or two down the line, then just leave because they're really money in it and stuff. And I think to a degree, like I was kind of similar in some ways. I was more excited about, you know, what you could possibly make with it and stuff and all the cool things that come along with it. But there was a part of me that was like, oh, you know, but if I get in early, you know, then
right.
sort of, you know, stand out and make a bit more money and stuff. But I don't know, it's a strange one. I'm now more of a point where it's like I'm more interested in just making like really cool stuff.
Yeah.
That hasn't really been done for and kind of like helping, you know, steer the VR ship in a way.
Yeah.
But it's exciting. It's interesting. You know, and I think at some point, you know, that there'll be headsets in, you know, every home, but
yeah,
like when they're a lot smaller to so like
yes.
a point where they're like ever so slightly bigger than like a standard pair of glasses.
Right.
But it just, I find it, it does make me laugh when some people, you know, you see some of the debates online about whether it's going to like take over film or something. You think, no.
Right. Yeah, like, exactly.
It's just another, you know, a medium for entertainment or, you know, education.
Yeah. And I think that that's a really good way of looking at it too, Daniel, because I, you know, there's purists out there, diehard people who are like, you know, virtual reality, they want to define it in a really specific way. Like virtual reality is just 6 degrees of freedom experiences with interactivity. That's all VR is.
Yeah.
And I think I look at VR more as just a tool that can be used in multiple mediums. You know, I can use VR in cinema. I can use VR in video games. I can use VR in training. I can use VR in music. And and so I try not to limit the scope and the possibilities of what this tool can be used for.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So what advice would you give to like any other creator that was looking to get into VR?
Well, I think that the first thing is really, I think you kind of hit on it, Daniel, in that your last little talk there is that you just have to, you have to love it to begin with. And, you know, part of the reason I think that Lightning was successful and why, you know, it was such a great experience is because I had no visions of future careers or making tons of money. I did it just because I loved it. It was just a passion coming through. So you got to love it. But it's a very easy medium to love. So that's an easy thing just to fall in love with it. But I think the next thing that I would suggest is, especially right now at this particular moment in VR history, the most of the content creators out there are pretty accessible online. And so the VR content creation community is big online. And they're at the moment, we're still at this place where most of the people online are very helpful. And there is competition, but it's healthy competition. And, you know, I go on to these forums and I ask a question and I'll have 5 or 6 people respond with really helpful insight. And I've made some good friends in the VR community. So it's a very hospitable environment right now. So this is a good time to get in. And then I guess the other advice would be just start playing. You know, there are some classes that you can take for some of these things. You know, I know there's a Tavori class that's being taught somewhere in the UK. I can't remember the name of the guy who's doing it, but a really great class there. But for the most part, all these users, you know, all these content creators, we've learned by just downloading the programs and just start playing around. So yeah, have a passion for it, get connected with other people who are doing it online and just start playing.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. Like in terms of the people in the community being very hospitable, I found in like the people that I've kind of connected with online and stuff that everyone is like genuinely interested in what everyone else is working on. And it's like, I've never come across that before. It's really nice. Like, I've spoken online to one of the producers at, I don't know if Here Be Dragons is still a thing anymore. Cause they don't seem to have any social media presence or something at the moment. I spoke to her a while back and, you know, that for me, that was kind of cool because they had just released, Dispatch, which I don't know if you've seen, is one of my like favorite pieces. At the time, and she was like one of the producers on that, and it's like, oh, okay, like little message back and forth, like just asking what I was up to and stuff, which is really amazing. So I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It's really cool time to be a part of
it. I think we're all figuring it out right now. It's kind of the Wild West in a lot of ways, and it's fun because there's no perfect right way of doing anything. We're all experimenting and we're all playing and figuring it out together.
And that's one of the other exciting things about it. It's like, you know, you can kind of help shape it, like, you know, the filmmakers back in the day, you know, did, you know, for Cinema Now. You could potentially be that person. You could be VR Spielberg.
Absolutely.
So it's really fun.
One can only hope.
Who knows? One day, maybe. I might be too old for that.
Well, just one other thing I would like to say, Daniel, and that is one of the things with Lightning, and this just kind of builds on, you know, the question you're asking about what advice and all that. But at the end of the day, if someone said, all right, Jeremy, you have to pick one term to describe yourself as an artist. You can't be a hybrid. You can't be an animator / writer, director, producer. You have to pick one thing to describe yourself. What would it be? And I realized that if I had to pick one term, it would be storyteller. And the reason why is because that is ultimately for me what this is all about. I don't, you know, when you asked would I ever do live action stuff again, absolutely I would. I'm interested in telling stories. And when I first got online and started getting plugged into the VR community, that was actually the thing that I saw missing. And that's not a complaint because I think that, you know, we still are like, just like you said, like in the days of cinema, we would go to, well, not we, but our ancestors would go to the theater and be enamored by just watching a film of a train coming into a station. And so, you know, we're still at that phase in VR in a lot of ways where people are just enamored by the experience. But it wasn't until story became a thing in cinema that cinema took off. And so, you know, I really believe that eventually, I think that's true with all technology, really. I mean, even the internet, you know, and you look at social media. I mean, social media is just an ongoing soap opera, you know, for better or for worse. It's just an ongoing soap opera that we tune into every day to see what's happening. And narrative is this thing. It's the language of the human brain. It's how we make sense of the world around us. And so, you know, that was really the ultimate goal for me was, can I actually not just create something fun to look at, but can I actually tell a good story? And so, you know, my encouragement to content creators out there would be, yes, learn the tools and make interesting looking things, but really consider how you can weave an actual narrative into what you're doing, because that's what people remember. They remember heart, they remember emotion, they remember characters, they remember experiences. That have some sort of impactful meaning. That's my storytelling soapbox that I will now get off.
that's perfect though. That I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with the, you know, with the term storyteller, really, because I think in this day and age it sort of seems like, you know, everyone is a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got these YouTubers who just, like, you know, make a video in their bedroom, but then they refer to themselves right. as a filmmaker. And that's, I'm right. not trying to take anything away from them, because, you know, the videos no. are great and stuff, but it's just like, okay, where, you know, how do you differentiate between, like, an actual filmmaker who makes films, someone
right.
who makes a video in their bedroom, YouTube and stuff.
Right. But,
you know, right. it's, and it, yeah, again, is that, like, are you a filmmaker or you're a director? Like, what's the difference kind of there? But storyteller kind of just sums everything up. And I yeah. think, yeah, I think that's just a perfect description, really.
Right. Yeah. And again, to me, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter the mm-hmm. medium, just as long as
yeah, absolutely.
Audiences have a meaningful experience. Yeah,
absolutely. Amazing. So we'll start wrapping up, but where can people find you online?
Yeah, you can find me on most major social media platforms like Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and my handle on all those platforms is Jer Casper, J-E-R-C-A-S-P-E-R. And so I'm always posting about my work, and I post a lot of things just about movies and cinema in general as well. So pretty easy to find.
Perfect. Brilliant. Okay, well, I'll stick all those in the podcast notes as well, so people can check those out. But yeah, once again, Jeremy, thank you so much for taking the time out to do this. Really appreciate it. And it's great chatting to you again.
Daniel, thank you so much for having me. It was an honor.
Thanks again to Jeremy for coming on the podcast. It was great to catch up with him and see what he'd been up to since we last spoke. If you enjoyed that as well, please feel free to subscribe for more interviews and conversational episodes with Alex and myself. Also, I'd be super grateful if you could give us a nice review on iTunes, as it really helps. If there are any other VR filmmakers you would like me to try and get on the podcast, or if you're one yourself and want to jump on an episode to talk about your work, feel free to reach out to me either on Instagram or Twitter at Daniel K. Hatton. That's H-A-T-T-O-N. And on that note, I thank you all for listening. I really appreciate the support, and I shall see you on the next one.